Solidigm just introduced an SLC SSD. The Linux Foundation produced some open tofu. CoreWeave chose VAST for their AI cloud. Mirantis announced a Lens App IQ. And Intel previewed their fifth generation Xeon scalable processors. All that and more here on the Rundown this week, plus a closer look at the big story of the week, which is Cisco acquiring Splunk. Welcome to the Gestalt IT Rundown, where each time we meet, we run down the IT news of the week with a little bit of snarkiness. I'm your host, Stephen Foskett, and joining me today as my co-host, filling in for Tom, is one of my favorite people, Mr. Ned Bellavance. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Stephen. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here. You know, Ned, today is the National Day of Forgiveness, as you're aware. Is there a National Day of Forgetfulness?
I can't remember.
It's also National Corned Beef Hash Day. And it's interesting. Is it corned beef or corned beef?
I believe it should be corned beef because corning is the process that the beef goes through to become corned beef. But I've heard it both ways.
And well, the thing is, like a corn is a grain of salt, a large grain of salt. So I imagine it could be corn beef too.
Yeah, I mean, corn actually can refer to any small unit. So acorns, for instance, are part of the corn family, as can be any other seed.
Barley.
So it could be anything, really.
Yeah, that's true. You could corn beef with anything. Well, on that note, let's get into this news of the week. The world of security continues to consolidate as Palo Alto Networks, now a $70 billion market cap company and security and networking juggernaut, is in advanced talks to acquire Talon and Dig to help round out its existing product portfolio. Talon Cybersecurity makes an enterprise browser for distributed workforces, and Dig Security specialized in securing data across public clouds. The former addresses the need to secure endpoint devices that are typically use a ton of web applications. This is an alternative to using a cloud proxy like Zscaler. Dig Security monitors your cloud data, real estate, and looks for potential leaks, preventing sensitive data from leaving the org and responding to active threats. Hey, maybe Microsoft could have used that with their 38 terabyte data that they leaked last week.
Yeah, that wasn't so great, was it? Left that Azure storage account just wide open with the SAS token. That was a little uncomfortable. Yeah, this is an interesting acquisition. Palo Alto, they are a powerhouse in the security space. And I think now they're just looking at all these startups out there. Both of these companies are less than 3 years old, and they're just looking for some quick acquisitions to fill out what they see as gaps in their portfolio. So that's what they've done here. Stephen, another interesting story here. Last week at Storage Field Day, Solidigm unveiled the D7P58110, an ultra-fast SLC SSD for data center applications. This new drive offers remarkable performance with up to 50 drive writes per day for random workloads and outperforms competitors in up to 2x in caching, high-performance compute, and other intense applications while costing significantly less than non-NAND storage class memory technologies. The Storage Field Day delegates were very impressed by this new drive and the possibilities it opens up in application acceleration, as demonstrated by Solidigm's CSAL demo.
Yeah, this is a big announcement. As many of the folks who listen to the Rundown are aware, there was a technology once upon a time called Optane, and this was a non-NAND storage class memory technology that Intel produced and positioned as basically an application acceleration engine or a high-performance, write-centric storage solution. Essentially, it kind of met right in the middle of flash and memory in terms of performance, in terms of cost and capacity. It was a really nice solution, and it found its way into a lot of caching applications. But Intel found that there just wasn't enough of a market for it and canceled it. So as you may know, Solidigm is Intel's a joint venture that is now an independent company and produces the successors to a lot of those Optane products. One of the most notable Optane products, and one of the ones that really got traction, was the P5800X SSD, which was basically an Optane and flash SSD that gave just tremendous performance, and it found a lot of that was the platform for a lot of these accelerators. Well, that's what this new model is intended to basically replace. Instead of using Optane, it uses NAND flash. In fact, it's the same 3D NAND that Solidigm uses for other applications, but it's SLC, meaning 1 bit per cell, not 3 or 4 bit per cell like most other SSDs. That means that the density is much, much less. We're looking at, you know, 800 gigabytes, 1.6 terabytes, that kind of range for these things, as opposed to, you know, like 60 terabytes, which is what they're announcing in their latest, multi-level cell offerings. But by using SLC, it means it's got much, much greater endurance, much, much greater performance. And that's really where this drive fits in. So essentially, it's nearly the same performance profile that you might get from an SSD that uses storage class memory that's not flash, but yet it costs more like a flash SSD, albeit a very expensive one. And that's really what we saw from Solidigm. It's a cool product. Glad to see that they came out with it. And it really rounds out their portfolio. It's kind of the BMW line. You got the D3, D5, D7 here in terms of performance and cost trade-offs. So that's what we saw from Solidigm. If you're interested, check out the Tech Field Day website. You can see more about the SSD as well as a demo of them using it in a cloud storage application acceleration scenario. Previously known as the OpenTF project, OpenTofu has been officially accepted as a Linux Foundation project. This is a response to the recent changes HashiCorp made to its licensing for core products like Terraform, which we covered here on the rundown. The BSL license restricts the use of each product as a direct competitor to HashiCorp offering. And the founders of OpenTofu project are largely Terraform cloud competitors that don't want to pay a licensing fee or be subject to HashiCorp's licensing. So, Ned, what do you think of OpenTofu?
It's certainly an interesting name, and I enjoy the lighthearted nature of it. However, if they're trying to pitch this to more traditional enterprise type organizations, the name might trip people up a little bit. I could certainly see, you know, as a DevOps engineer going into my boss's office and trying to pitch him on this new project called OpenTofu, and he's just going to look at me like, you know, I have to pitch this up to the CIO, right? So I understand why they had to choose a name that was not OpenTF because of potential trademark issues. There's a very long GitHub issue that goes into why they chose this name. I think from a larger perspective, it's instructive to see how out of all the different projects and products that HashiCorp has, like Vault and Nomad and Console, the only one that has received any serious pushback with the licensing change has been Terraform. And that's largely because it's the only one that businesses have built out an offering specifically around. These companies like MZero and Spacelift have built out an automation offering that uses Terraform to deploy infrastructure, but adds a bunch of different services on top, but it's a direct competitor to HashiCorp's Terraform cloud product. Now, I can understand HashiCorp's situation here. We're the ones in charge of doing most of the development for Terraform. Yes, it's open source or was open source prior to the licensing change, but we were doing like 95% of the work. And these other companies were getting all the benefits of the engineering hours and the product development hours that we put into it. Because it's not just about writing code. It's about going out and talking to customers, figuring out what they want, developing a roadmap, squashing bugs, all those kinds of things. HashiCorp was tired of not getting any compensation and essentially these companies using their product for free. So they said, well, now you have to pay us for it if you want to use it in this way. And those companies said, well, no thanks. I'm just going to fork this project. And I'm being a little reductive here. But that's essentially what happened. Some of it is around open source principles. You know, this was an open source project. It's for the community. It should stay that way. And part of it's very much a business decision on both sides of the avenue. So there shouldn't be a whole lot of finger pointing and capitalist flag waving here. Both of them are doing it for what are essentially business reasons. Whether or not OpenTofu is successful is definitely going to rely on continued support, not just from the community, but from these companies who are going to be paying for full-time employees to maintain this code base. It's easy to do this in the wake of a big decision, but as things drag on year one, year two, will there still be that level of support and dedication for this project? I guess time will tell. CoreWeave and Vast Data are teaming up to create an AI cloud powered by NVIDIA. CoreWeave, the leader in AI as a service, will use the Vast Data platform to build a scalable and high-performance cloud for AI and accelerated computing. This partnership aims to offer secure, multi-tenant solutions for machine learning, and the companies promise substantial cost savings and speed advantages. Now, we've spoken about CoreWeave before, and we know Vast Data very well. So what should we make of all this, Stephen?
Well, it's a great announcement. Frankly, it's a great combination of technologies. As we talked about in the past, CoreWeave is basically building themselves up to be the AWS for AI. They are producing, they're securing a tremendous amount of NVIDIA GPUs and machine learning, building a machine learning supercomputer in the cloud that can be shared for customers. Now, as those of us in the storage industry love to point out, no computer is very good without great storage. Well, Vast Data is one of the best storage platforms out there. As we've seen at our field day events, the company has presented a few times, including, I might point out, at AI Field Day back in November of 2020, where they talked about using the Vast Data platform as a foundation for machine learning and artificial intelligence. That's exactly what is being used here and what's being built out. The Vast platform is really tremendous. It offers high performance. It is able to scale very, very smoothly. It has really great multi-tenancy and zero-trust features built in. And those are the things that CoreWeave is leveraging here because, of course, their customers are going to need just tremendous amounts of scalable high-performance storage. So it really is a great combination. I'm glad to see that this is happening. You know, congratulations to Vast and also to CoreWeave. We've really been watching your growth with great interest over here at Gestalt IT. It's pretty cool what you're building out there. So way to go in picking Vast Data. And I think this just really enhances the overall CoreWeave offering. Ned Marantis has announced a SaaS service meant to build on their existing Lens set of products. Lens Desktop is a client-based solution meant to help DevOps engineers and platform teams monitor and manage the applications running on Kubernetes clusters. Lens App IQ enhances that functionality by moving the monitoring components into each Kubernetes cluster and providing a central management point for an application-centric view of workloads. It can work in tandem with Lens Desktop, expanding functionality, or be presented separately to folks who might not have the client installed, such as developers or security team members. What's your take on Lens App IQ?
I think it's a logical extension of what Lens Desktop was already doing. Lens Desktop really was a client-based application. It didn't have a central store of logs, per se. So it would ingest logs as they happened so you could track the performance of an application over time. But that wasn't something that you were sharing out with everybody else in your team. And generally, people tend to work in teams. So if you're trying to troubleshoot the status of an application or get a bird's eye view of what's going on with your Kubernetes clusters, Lens Desktop could do that, but it was very individualized. Lens App IQ, now you are actually installing a very small agent inside each Kubernetes cluster that you want to manage. And then it provides you a unified view of all of your clusters across whatever cloud real estate you have. And that was a pretty central part. I got a briefing on this from the folks over at Marantis. And a pretty core part of the value proposition here is it's not just Azure Kubernetes Service or Elastic Kubernetes Service on AWS. It's any standard Kubernetes cluster, wherever it might be. You drop this little agent on it, and now it will stream all that data back up to App IQ. And if you want to host it yourself, you can. There is that option for folks who aren't happy with SaaS, or at least can't do it from a compliance perspective. But either way, streams all that information in, gives you a holistic view, and you can really view it by application and workload, as opposed to looking at pods and services and other components like daemon sets, it has an understanding of what constitutes an application in Kubernetes. And so it can show you that entire package as opposed to just seeing one individual component and trying to extrapolate information from there. So I think it's going to be a useful addition to their existing products and might actually end up being the crown jewel of what they're trying to do with application monitoring and performance. Intel, Stephen, is claiming that their processor and manufacturing roadmap is not just on track, but accelerating. The new Xeon SP called Birchstream includes future releases nicknamed Granite Rapids, Clearwater Forest, and Sierra Forest, and all are coming in the next year. Intel's CEO, Pat Gelsinger, emphasized the importance of cloud and developers, and Sierra Forest is particularly interesting in that it packs 288 cores onto a single processor and is manufactured using 5-nanometer EUV processes. What's your take, Stephen, on Intel's innovation announcements?
Yeah, Intel really pulled out all the stops at Intel Innovation last week. It was a pretty intense session. I was only able to join remotely, but some of my folks that were there in person said, you know, they just kept saying, you know, and another one, and another one. So yeah, Intel had a lot to announce. And I think that the point of Intel Innovation was basically for Pat Gelsinger to get there up there in front of the entire industry and say, look, we are doing this. We're actually going to make it happen. And what it is getting manufacturing back on track, getting the Xeon product lines back on track, doing more with the core components, core technologies that they want. And the unspoken thing, of course, is getting rid of the technologies that Intel no longer finds strategic. So let's zoom into a couple of the announcements that are particularly relevant for the enterprise tech industry. Now, the big one that I want to call attention to was the sort of the big numbers here from Sierra Forest. So this is a version of the Xeon scalable processor that has that uses the E cores instead of the P cores. Now, we've talked a little bit about this before, where Intel has two different kinds of cores now. The P cores, performance cores, just like Apple and other Android systems do. The performance cores are basically high performance, multi-threaded with all the latest instructions. The E cores are much, much smaller. Imagine that they're about four, you can fit four of them in the same space that you could fit one P core on the processor. We've all been in the industry saying, wait a second, what if you put a whole pile of those cores on one chip? Now, we had been expecting Intel to announce 144 core Xeon using E cores because it seemed that that's what they could do with a chiplet pretty easily. Well, they wowed us by doubling that. They put two of them next to each other and have produced a 288 core Xeon. Now, the reason this is interesting is number one, because if you look at what the other companies are doing out there, like AMD with their Bergamo, Ampere with their Ultras, they are packing in a ton of cores, but not 288 cores. And that's pretty cool. So this is basically a processor designed to maximize core count for applications like cloud computing. And it's going to be interesting to see if cloud service providers adopt this, because as you can imagine, having 288 cores per chip, you can have some pretty dense servers. It makes me wonder about memory and I/O though. Well, I guess we'll see. The other thing is that they're manufacturing this on a 5-nanometer process that they're calling Intel 3. So this is supposed to compete with the 3-nanometer processes from TSMC, which again is Intel saying, look, we're on track here with manufacturing. We're really doing this. Intel also talked about other future releases. Granite Rapids is the next Xeon SP platform, the fifth generation. It's going to have brand new P cores and E cores in it, and that's going to be coming out soon. We'll also see more server platforms coming out in 2024 and into 2025 based on those new cores. And I can't wait to hear what they are delivering. In all, it's an exciting situation because basically Intel has really lagged and struggled the last few years. And that's what Gelsinger came in here to get back on track. And as I said at the top of the story, that's really what we're hearing from him here. Now comes the hard part. actually getting these things into market, getting them manufactured, getting customers, getting them delivered and deployed. And we'll see where that goes. But so far, really good news coming out of Intel. Now let's take a closer look at the top story of the week. And if there is a top story of the week, it's usually the one that gets not just the insiders buzzing, but everybody buzzing. And this week, that was Cisco's announcement that they will acquire Splunk. I guess third time's the charm, right? If rumors are to be believed, Cisco had approached Splunk two separate times to talk about an acquisition, but their offers were rebuffed for unknown reasons. I'm going to guess that was based on money. Well, we'll see. This time, it appears that all the planets and dollars aligned, and Splunk has entered into a definitive agreement to be acquired by Cisco for $28 billion. Now, let's not make the joke that this is cheaper than their Splunk license. Oh, man, I just did it, didn't I? Well, Ned, what's your take on this acquisition?
I think it's a smart acquisition by Cisco. There's a perception in the marketplace right now that Cisco is not a growth company and it doesn't really have a roadmap for the future, right? It's a company that will sell you some switches and routers, and yeah, they have a security suite, but if you're looking at sort of what's happening in the larger networking space, there's a bunch of other companies that have kind of rolled up and grabbed some market share. You've got the Aristas of the world with the data center networking. You've got Palo Alto that we talked about at the top, who's really kind of taken the crown when it comes to firewall and security type features, and Fortinet's right behind them doing stuff like that. So there was this perception that Cisco needs to do something. And what better than to take its giant reserves of capital, which we know it has, and apply them to acquire a company that's well known for basically printing money. And that's what Splunk does. Splunk charges comfortably expensive fees to basically suck up all your data and then try to provide some insights based off of that information. Now, Cisco's had previous offerings around that general concept, especially with its acquisition of ThousandEyes, which was a couple of years ago, and AppDynamics. AppDynamics was intended to do application performance monitoring, essentially. And so they do have some products in this space, but nothing that is specific to what Splunk does. And I think there was another product called Tetration that they built in-house that was basically supposed to vacuum up every single packet in your data center and analyze that as well. So I'm not sure if there's going to be some synergies between these existing product lines and what Splunk has to offer, or if they're just going to keep them sort of cardoned off and printing their own money for the time being. Well, what's your take on it, Stephen?
Yeah, so Tom and I talked about this before he stepped out this week, and I'm going to rely on Tom's analysis and my analysis because he knows this space very, very well. So first off, I would say that probably the biggest surprise is the dollar amount. This is Cisco's biggest ever acquisition and leaves the company without that much cash left over. So hopefully it really happens. But that being said, as my friend and yours, Justin Warren, points out, this thing is going to be generating cash from the get-go. So it's a pretty safe acquisition for Cisco to make. You know, it's cash flow positive. Splunk has a lot of great customers. So from Tom's take and mine as well, one of the interesting aspects here is that a lot of Cisco's play, especially in the security space, is reliant on data. They need data to analyze. Well, guess what Splunk has? Splunk has the data. And that's one thing you know, that provides some synergy here. Another thing that we're seeing is that Cisco has long been considered to be a hardware company, which is really not true. I mean, even from the, you know, decades ago, Cisco was really more about software than hardware. But I think people look at them and value the company more as a hardware play. Well, Splunk is all about the software. And frankly, very few companies in the enterprise space have managed to make software recurring revenue as lucrative as Splunk has. So that's pretty cool for Chuck Robbins to be able to branch out Cisco and give it this tremendous new revenue stream. Wall Street is going to love this, their first quarter earnings, I bet, because it's going to really transform Cisco's balance sheet. Now, the other thing here is basically the overall synergy of Cisco and Splunk. Again, they appeal to many similar customers. Most of those customers are already customers on both sides and are perfectly happy to be combining that. The sales reps must be just rubbing their hands, thinking of all the ways that they can come up with package deals. We'll save you some money and sell you some more. And I think that really, from my perspective, is the benefit here to Cisco. It's just such a tremendous market for them to get into. It just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it seems like many people would be customers of both, but there's still going to be lots of companies that were perhaps born in the cloud and are heavily using Splunk today, but have never touched Cisco gear because, yes, they think of Cisco as a traditional hardware company. And why would they go buy something from Cisco when we're a cool new cloud startup? We should buy products from other cool new cloud startups. So the fact that they're already using Splunk today and now Cisco can walk in and go, well, we have your data. Look at all these cool things we could do with that data. If you just sign up for a few additional licenses in this subscription trial basis. So there's definitely some sales opportunities to there. I think the other big thing that's hanging over this entire discussion is artificial intelligence, right? AI. If there's one thing that AI relies on, it's massive amounts of data to train those AI models. What does Splunk have? Massive amounts of AI data. And Cisco has the networking chops to help assemble AI clusters and do the processing for that. So I'm interested to see what partnerships Cisco reaches out to sort of create the vision that they may already have when it comes to Splunk and AI. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, that's a real smart take, Ned. And I completely agree with you that AI is all about the data too. And AI is just such a natural fit in security. We've talked about this 100 times. Security is just like one of the best applications for artificial intelligence and machine learning, deep learning, because it's really good at finding needles in haystacks and finding grains of hay. Hay doesn't come in grains, corns of hay that don't belong. And that's really what you could do with all this incredible Splunk data. But that being said, neither Cisco nor Splunk is really considered to be on the leading edge of the artificial intelligence and data-driven world. And there are a lot of startups coming. I am going to say right here, right now, Cisco is going to make a few more acquisitions very, very quickly in order to leverage this Splunk data. So it's important to note, this hasn't, this hasn't closed yet. It's not official yet. It's an agreement. Once it closes, I think Cisco is going to make some pretty quick acquisitions in the AI-driven security, AI-driven observability space. And I think a lot of those are going to be smaller acquisitions of smaller companies that have cool technology that would be useful in a Cisco plus Splunk world that may not have been useful in a Splunk-only or Cisco-only world. So if I were one of those companies or the VCs that are funding them, I would be wanting to get my product in front of as many Cisco and Splunk people as quick as possible, because I think the wallet is going to open up in about 6 months on those products. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the Gestalt IT Rundown this week, Ned. Before we go, let's take a look at what's going on in the week ahead. So next week, we have Edge Field Day coming up. Yeah, that's right. Tech Field Day goes to the Edge. And we're really looking forward to seeing some presentations there and discussions there around the latest in edge computing. We will see Solidigm, StoreMagic, NodeWeaver, and a partner presentation with Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, along with some great presentations from the delegates themselves. We also have a Cloud Field Day event coming up. That's pretty exciting. So Cloud Field Day 18 is going to be here. Before we know it, we'll hear from companies like Weka, Fortinet, Prosumo, Juniper, and more right there, including a brand new field day. I just can't wait till you see this field day introduction thing that we're doing. Then we've got Networking Field Day coming up. Networking Field Day has a great number of companies coming as well. I'll let Tom tell you about that next week. Thanks for watching the Gestalt IT Rundown. You can catch new episodes every Wednesday as a YouTube video. Just go to YouTube/GestaltITvideo, or you can find us in your favorite podcast application. We will be back next Wednesday to talk about all of the IT news from the week that was. But until then, for myself, for Tom, for Ned Bellevance, thank you so much for joining us. And for all of us here in the Gestalt IT family, Here's wishing you and yours a splunktastic day. We'll be right back.